Build something you can be proud of. There's something incredibly satisfying about learning something new and actually watching your progress build over time. That's what I love about Rosetta Stone. You don't have to dive in for hours. You start small, fit lessons into your day, and suddenly you're understanding more than you thought you would. Rosetta Stone has been the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years, and their immersive, intuitive method really stands out. There's no memorizing random vocabulary lists and no feeling lost. You learn naturally, starting with words, building to phrases, and then full sentences, without English translations, so it actually sticks. Plus, Rosetta Stone offers 25 languages, from Spanish and French to German and Japanese, all designed for long-term retention. Don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. Listeners of this podcast can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 to get started and claim your 50% off today. Go to rosettastone.com/rs10 and start learning today.
Why have we asked our contractor we found on Angie.com to be our kids' legal guardian? Because he took such good care when redoing our basement that we knew we could trust him to care for our kids.
We only met a month ago.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
High and inside, arching music, a little chin music. Take that hitter for a ride.
It's time for some chin music.
Hey, Yomp, how about a warning?
Sure. Watch out you don't get killed.
Because sometimes in baseball, you've got to send a strong message, especially when someone has it coming. Each Saturday, David and Bruce come in high and tight with a response to something that deserves one, like this.
I voted for Coach Belichick in the Hall of Fame selection meeting. The Pro Football Hall of Fame has confirmed that fact through the auditors of the selection process. Again, I'll state that I never said that I believe that Coach Belichick should, quote, wait a year, close quote, for enshrinement.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. David Haw, Bruce Levine here until 11 o'clock playing a little chin music. That was Bill Polian on Sirius XM Radio explaining what was a very tumultuous week in the world of Bill Polian. And explaining that he did not, in fact, according to the audit of his vote, he did not vote against Bill Belichick, or he did vote for him, is a better way to put it. And there's controversy because Bill Belichick is not going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, and that created quite a stir. And Bruce, this is a baseball show. We are talking baseball, but you thought it would be a good idea, and I agreed with you, to examine the differences in the two sports and the two halls of fame, respectively, and how the voting process works and why it may work some ways better in one sport and not in another. How do you see this whole thing unfolding?
So let's get down to cases. Bill Belichick is not in the Hall of Fame because he cheated. And some people are punishing him by not voting him in on the first ballot because of the cheating with the football and deflating the football.
Deflategate and Spygate.
So I looked at it like this. Carlos Beltran was just voted into the Hall of Fame, the Baseball Hall of Fame. He was also involved in a cheating circumstance where they were getting signals, banging garbage cans, and knew if it was a fastball or a breaking
ball. The Astros, it was elaborate, and some of it involved allegedly sensors that were taped to people's bodies.
So the non-punishment of players helped Beltran in the long run. Not initially, because he was initially named manager of the Mets at that time, and immediately lost that job before he managed one game because of that cheating. And
so this
let me finish. And he didn't get into the Hall of Fame earlier because people like me will refuse to vote for him because he cheated. And I don't think he belongs in the Hall of Fame for that. His numbers tell you he belongs in the Hall of Fame. You know, he was a great player through the years. I feel like if he had a cheat like that, he doesn't get my vote. Now, other people feel the same way about Belichick. This is happening right now. First, I need to ask you, do you think that's fair or not?
The Belichick part of it? Belichick omission from the Hall of Fame class this year is an absurdity that should make everyone question the process. Let me finish, Bruce. You're about to jump in. You're like, yeah, I disagree.
I'm like you.
unfortunately, true. I think it's absurd, Bruce, because there is no world that Bill Belichick doesn't belong in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He has 6 Super Bowls as a head coach, 2 as an assistant coach. There has not been a greater, you can make the argument, NFL head coach. So for him not to be voted on, despite all of the explanations and why the voters wanted to get 2 other guys who were coming off the ballot into the Hall of Fame, I understand and respect them coming forward, Vahe Gregorian in Kansas City and Mike Chappell in Indianapolis. I know both those guys. They're solid journalists. But it doesn't make any sense to me, however you describe it, couch it, or rationalize it, you check that box and then you move on. That's why it's absurd to me. And I don't know that it is applicable to Beltran, even though I think what you're saying is
cheating.
Both guys serve a penance and both guys paid a price and then they were able to go into the Hall of Fame. I don't think that was necessary in the case of Belichick.
Did you think it was okay with Beltran?
I didn't vote for Beltran.
Why?
Because of what you just said.
Oh.
No, the plot doesn't thicken like that, Bruce.
Oh.
Beltran was the ringleader of the Astro scandal.
Oh.
Yes. Oh.
Who was the ringleader of the football issue with the Patriots?
I don't see... That's going to open a can of worms. 312-644-6767. Let me finish here. I think that there are similarities between Spygate, Deflategate, and the Astro scandal. But I don't know that what the Patriots did in the way in Spygate was that different from what many other teams do. I don't think that, but whereas I think what the Astros did was pretty elaborate. And I think it was not as common as I think what the Patriots did.
But you pointed to the fact Beltran was the leader over there.
Yes.
And that, in fact, Belichick is the leader of the New England Patriots. So the similarities are there. Here's the thing.
All right. Here's
the thing.
Go ahead.
Here's the one thing I'm going to say. He'll get in the next vote, right?
Yeah. But okay. He won't be able to get in the first vote.
Okay.
You'll never be able to change that part of football history.
And
it's absurd because it says the process is flawed.
Do you
it's
think
broken.
In 1955, if there was sports radio, that this topic would have been going on for 2 years when Joe DiMaggio wasn't voted into the Hall of Fame on the first ballot?
That's impossible to answer. But I like the way that you're coming after me. I think it's impossible to answer, but I don't know. You're not supposed to say, I don't know, but I don't know.
No, because you're a smart guy, you said, I don't know.
Well, it's impossible to say that you would know. Here's the other thing about Belichick, the only thing I want to add. And his role in the Patriot dynasty was more obvious and you take him away from the Patriots, and they don't win 6 Super Bowls. You take Beltran away from the Astros, and they might still win the World Series.
That's why
I think it's more obvious and definitive. And when you're talking about leaving Belichick out, it's to me a more egregious than it would be for Beltran.
What was the punishment for Belichick?
He had paid a fine, I think overall it was like $2 million in fines, but two separate incidents, and he was definitely penalized.
But not kicked, he wasn't fired.
No, not at all.
So with Beltran and all the Astro players, this is the one thing that I despised about the whole thing. Because they admitted to the commissioner that they cheated, mm-hmm. they went unscathed as far as any penalties go. And the commissioner felt it was more important to get these players to admit that they cheated to be able to move on from this scandal. And he negotiated with the Players Association a deal where they wouldn't be punished.
Hmm. Interesting. I think that I have yet to vote for Carlos Beltran. You did, apparently. You did not.
No.
Okay. Would you vote for Belichick? If you're a football writer, if you're in that vote, if you're one of the 50 people in that room, and they're not all writers, we know there's some contributors, we know there's some former coaches, and also guys like Bill Polian. But would you vote for Bill Belichick?
I'd have to consider the transgressions.
You sound like a hard no. I mean, you're coming after me. You sound like you're a hard no.
I just said I'd have to consider it.
All right. I'm asking you to consider it quickly.
I don't have that vote, so I can't tell you. But it would take me some time to think about it because, you know, I don't know the rules with the NFL. I know the rules in baseball state character is certainly an issue that you need to consider before
there is that clause. I think that's not part of the Hall of Fame. And the Pro Football Hall of Fame conversation.
And that is really important.
Yeah.
It's really important to decide between the rules on each. But again, on the quality of their work, there's no question that both of them are going into the Hall of Fame. Belichick will. You know, did we do the research?
Yeah, I did the research. Okay. I got my homework assignment. I did your research before the show. Don Shula, first ballot Hall of Famer, 1997. Tom Landry, 1990, first ballot Hall of Famer. Vince Lombardi, no.
No.
But he went in after he passed away in 1971.
But the first ballot, he was not.
He was not. And there are other accomplished coaches that did not go in on the first ballot. Joe Gibbs, Bill Walsh, Jimmy Johnson, Hank Stram, John Madden, Bill Parcells. All of those guys were not first ballot Hall of Famers. None of those guys are Bill Belichick. None of them. What you know what I'm holding up here, Bruce?
Mark
People
Trestman,
can't see on Twitch. I'm holding up six fingers.
Mark Trestman in that list?
We're not talking about the Canadian Football Hall of Fame.
Okay. But it's good to know, and it's good work on your part.
I don't know if it's that good work.
You get an A on that assignment.
Thank you. 312-644-6767, if people have strong opinions on this.
Here's my last point on this.
Yep.
All those guys that went into the Hall of Fame, not on the first ballot, nobody cares anymore because they are in the Hall of Fame. Bill Belichick will be in the Hall of Fame next vote.
There's no question about it, especially now with the attention paid this. I do think a couple things. Number one, first of all, to answer your question, yes, according to Adam Studzinski, for Spygate, the Patriots forfeited a first-round draft pick, and they had a maximum fine. So they were penalized. That was litigated, if you will, in the football context.
Not Belichick.
It hurt him by not having a first-round draft pick. He's the coach.
It's his idea.
I think this screams for a re-examination of the Pro Football Hall of Fame selection process.
My final statement on this is that people are apologetic and feel bad when they get caught. They didn't feel bad about doing it. They feel bad that they got caught. And to me, that's not acceptable reason.
You think the Astros are the only team that were trying to steal signals?
No, they got caught.
Okay.
Belichick got caught.
And guys, just to clarify, for the Spygate thing, Bill Belichick himself was also fined. So the team was fined, Belichick was fined, and the team lost the first round
pick. How much was it, Adam?
Belichick was fined $500,000.
Okay. That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, but
a lot of footballs.
I'm sure that... The absurdity will come when we learn later this week that Robert Kraft is going into the Hall of Fame and Bill Belichick is not.
Pete Rose never apologized sincerely for what he did. He apologized because he got caught. And to be able to differentiate between true, you know, I'm sorry, as opposed to I'm sorry I got caught, is really the hardest thing to do ever.
The Halls of Fame provide so much conversation and controversy that you mentioned the Baseball Hall of Fame, and we are proud voting members. Absolutely, that's full disclosure. But it doesn't include Pete Rose or Barry Bonds, the hit king and the home run king. And I understand why. I defend both of those decisions. I don't vote for Barry Bonds.
Yeah.
And I get it all. And then the Pro Football Hall of Fame, you know, they have the audacity to keep out a guy who won 6 Super Bowls, which is ridiculous and absurd. And that was this week's story.
It's not forever, though.
I guess not.
But it's great that we have talk radio. It's fantastic.
Some people were upset that we're spending time talking on a baseball show about a football process.
But there are
connections.
It is, and it's news, you know, for sure. But the idea that Beltran is still myself and you still punished him for his transgressions of cheating. I mean, without that, would you have voted him in right away?
Yes.
Okay.
He has the numbers.
He has
Hall of Fame level production throughout the course of his career.
It's hard to argue.
Let me ask you another tough question to bring it back into baseball and to Chicago and the Cubs. We just discussed Carlos Beltran's role in the sign stealing scandal and how he paid a penance, if you will, by not getting the managerial job for the Mets and having to wait to go into the Hall of Fame. Is Alex Bregman part of that?
All of them are.
Is Alex Bregman somebody who was obviously the difference maker for the Cubs, was cheered and bathed with adulation at the Cub convention, and certainly...
Why don't you take it a step further? Will it affect him going into the Hall of Fame?
Is he a Hall of Fame player?
Not yet.
Do you think he will be?
Let's see what he does the next 5 years.
Do you think it should be? Do you think he should? Do you factor that into his...
It's a consideration.
...success?
It's a consideration.
It wasn't when the Cubs were giving him $175 million.
No, and there are stories out there that he refused to take the information.
I like the stories that I've heard about Alex Bregman as it pertains to Houston.
That he plugged his ears.
I know.
And that he didn't want to know.
He's a gamer.
And the same thing with Altuve.
But he's a lot to like. But some people will link him, though.
Because if you're the best player on a team that cheated, you knew about it. It's the same argument with A.J. Hinch, the manager, who said very infamously, I knew they were cheating, but there was nothing I felt I could do about it.
Well, that to me...
I didn't like it.
In his role,
That was hindsight.
It's hindsight, and that's, I guess it's easy to say, but I didn't like that.
No, I can never... I can't
absolution.
I couldn't look at him the same way after that because of the fact... that he was in charge, he knew there was cheating, he's saying afterwards, and he got penalized. He was out of the game for a year, okay? So he paid his penance. The players did not. But he said, I knew about it. I didn't think there was anything I could do about it.
So comparing again the two processes, the Baseball Hall of Fame and the Football Hall of Fame, Baseball Hall of Fame has more than nearly 600 voters, right, in the baseball?
Not anymore, I don't think.
Is it as high as that, maybe 500 voters?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
So it's dwindled.
It's dropping, like when newspapers like the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette go out of business.
Let's not discuss newspapers,
well,
Bruce.
That's why.
Don't bring me down, okay?
The Washington Post made a big
decision. Oh, we don't need to get into that. All right, sorry. But do you believe that process is going to be... one that is tweaked, changed, or do you think it's still the best way to do it? And likewise with
as
football.
As far as what?
Well, is there any other way? Could you ever see baseball going to a 50-member committee? Or as Pro Football Hall of Fame has a set of electors? They're not. This is not the Pro Football Writers Association of America.
Yeah, you never say never, because there has been a BBWAA and Major League Baseball fistfight over having the award shows done through Major League Baseball and the awards announced on a Major League Baseball production show.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been, over the last 3 years, 4 years, there's been negotiating about doing that, and it hasn't gone Major League Baseball's way. The writers have refused to do it that way, and therefore, when you say, could it be that they change the rules down the road, they could. It would be the Hall of Fame, though.
This is wildly unrealistic, but when you look at the Halls of Fame, I just think that, okay, say if I'm writing a story about Bill Belichick, if I'm writing a story about Carlos Beltran or Alex Bregman, and I'm writing their biography or a long, in-depth profile, I will be tasked as a writer and a journalist to include all of it. This is not going to be some of it. It's not going to be a PR campaign nominating them for Citizen of the Year. If you have an obligation as a reporter to cover all sides of that story. I don't know why, when it comes to these Halls of Fame, that stops.
Right.
Because there would be a lot more honest accounting and recording of history if we were just to say, you know what, Barry Bonds?
Right.
He hit more homers than anybody in baseball under the cloud of suspicion. Sammy Sosa, he revitalized Cub fans at Wrigley Field while he did so with people skeptical about his methods. All these things you can explain away, Bruce, but we want to pretend like they never happened, and so we can't write the history of baseball without Pete Rose or Barry Bonds, and yet, you know, it's unfortunate that that's the case.
Would Beltran be in today if the commissioner suspended those players for any period of time for their part in the cheating?
No, I don't think they would. I'm not sure that they would.
And would it impact?
Because it would have formalized
Altuve and Bregman, who are would be, you know, future Hall of Famers.
Do you think that Jose Altuve is a first ballot Hall of Famer?
I don't know that.
Whenever he comes up.
And I don't know if the other voters will look at the cheating part as something they're going to consider. Certainly, if people are doing it with Beltran, why would you not do it with Altuve?
Your plaque can say a variety of things, and I think they should just reflect the truth. And the truth is that these guys were kept out, or they were operating under a cloud of suspicion. Alex Rodriguez, who admitted this or admitted that.
But these guys weren't punished.
I know they weren't punished, but they were discussed. So it doesn't matter about the punishment.
It does.
What I just described, it's unrealistic. It's Pollyannish. It's something that won't happen because nobody will change. Neither Halls of Fame will change their methods to that degree.
They might. The Baseball Hall of Fame might. They might do it after Miss Clark, who runs the Baseball Hall of Fame, mm-hmm. and all. Once she is no longer in charge there, anything can happen to that Hall of Fame. Anything, and that means even taken over at some point by Major League Baseball, and that could be a big change.
Let's squeeze in a quick phone call. Mike is in Willow Springs. Mike, welcome inside the clubhouse.
Hey, you guys. Thanks a lot for taking my call. Two things. One is a quick Hall of Fame question / good bar bet. Bruce, specifically, why wasn't Cy Young a first ballot Hall of Famer?
That's a good question.
I'm not sure why. Maybe because he lost too many games rather than the 511 he won.
No, and I wasn't alive to know if he cheated or not. So
right.
That's a moot point. But no, actually, the first rules were written for pre-1900 and post-1900. And Cy Young's career spanned from 1890 to 1911. So he received 70% of the votes approximately for pre-1900 and 65 to 70% of the votes for post-1900.
It's good, Barbara.
Good to know.
It's good trivia.
Thank you.
What else, Mike?
Good. All right. This is important. I've been wanting to ask you this for a little bit, Bruce. I hit this brainstorm, I think. Why doesn't baseball consider a football-type fourth-place schedule And what I mean by that is, let's simplistically say you took six division games away, went down from 21 to 15, and you had the Pirates play the other two.
First of all, you have 13 division games with each team.
You only have 13?
With each team.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Balanced scheduling. Yep, balanced scheduling.
So it's 52 games in your division.
Yeah, it's kind of come around, Mike. Yeah.
I guess I'm asking how. Okay, that being said, that's a problem because you want to play your division games. But how could they do it where they mirror the NFL, which is so successful because of parity? And I know that we're going to go to a lockout with the salary cap, but how could we do it where the Pirates would play the Marlins and, you know, one more series, and the Pirates would play whoever finished the Arizona Diamondbacks, if, you know, whoever finished last in the West? How could we do that for a six or nine game and make it more of a parity? In other words, the NFL is so successful because of parity.
Yeah, you have 19.
And I've never heard a word anywhere about.
You have 17 games and 162.
Thanks for the phone call, Mike. Appreciate the. We have to move on.
I mean, the theory is, his theory is correct. You know, you want to make it more compelling, especially that last month of the season.
All right, when we come back, we are going to discuss who might be still out there and available for the Cubs and the White Sox, and who might be Chicago bound. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Build something you can be proud of. There's something incredibly satisfying about learning something new and actually watching your progress build over time. That's what I love about Rosetta Stone. You don't have to dive in for hours. You start small, fit lessons into your day, and suddenly you're understanding more than you thought you would. Rosetta Stone has been the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years, and their immersive, intuitive method really stands out. There's no memorizing random vocabulary lists and no feeling lost. You learn naturally, starting with words, building to phrases, and then full sentences, without English translations. So it actually sticks. Plus, Rosetta Stone offers 25 languages, from Spanish and French to German and Japanese, all designed for long-term retention. Don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. Listeners of this podcast can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10 to get started and claim your 50% off today. Go to rosettastone.com/RS10 and start learning today.
Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster? I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet nibbles after his untimely end.
This is very strange.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm going to tell you something that you all should know. Chicago is the greatest place I ever know. I'm going to stay in this town. I'm going to live in this town. I'm going to live in Chicago, the greatest place around.
The Cubs and Sox are off for the winter, but inside the clubhouse starts the hot stove discussion now. David and Bruce take a look at which free agents and trades the Cubs and Sox should explore. Will they trade for a top pitcher or player? Is free agency the way the North and South Siders go? You help them make the call. 312-644-6767.
Welcome back. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We're going till 11 o'clock before Steve Rosenblum takes over. And Bruce, spring training right around the corner, people heading to Arizona in the next week, and Cubs and Sox and Mesa and Glendale respectively. Are the rosters set? Is there anybody, as the segment asks, Chicago bound? Anybody coming to town yet that might not be on either roster? And I think that we talked earlier about Zach Gallen. His name comes up a lot. Is there anybody else out there that either the Cubs or the Sox believe could be a missing piece or somebody that could help this team?
There are not a lot of quality outfielders left to fill in for the White Sox. They made a strong move today in signing Hayes. But I like the name of Michael Conforto for the White Sox.
I think I do too. But
left-handed power bat.
I think he's going to be more expensive.
No. Coming off of a bad year, 20 home runs the year before, used to be more significant, moving toward his middle 30s. I think people will be yelling, wait, Levine, we already have Benintendi, you know? People don't even talk about him being around. He's here at least 2 more years, David. You know, I mean, you know, with all due respect to him, you know, one of the most insignificant signings for the White Sox in a long time.
Wow. Yeah. Well, he at one point was the richest free agent contract the Sox had ever issued.
Right.
And
it still is, isn't it?
I think the way I might describe
it. It still is.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. $75 million, 5 years. And his career with the White Sox has been rather nondescript. That'd be the best way for I think I could describe
very
it.
Very injury prone.
And that injury will prevent him from playing left field as much as being the designated hitter. Would you say that's an accurate expectation?
Sounds that way. I don't blame him as much as I blame injuries for his lack of production, but it's been ineffectual.
Austin Hayes was the Michael Conforto move. You were going to get either one or the other. I don't know that you're going to afford both because they do seem pretty duplicate in terms of parts in the outfield. Austin Hayes, 1 year, $6 million, seems like a modest investment into some professional stability, and that's what Chris Getz got this morning when that deal was struck. I saw a name come up this week as well and talked to some people about it and didn't quite know what you thought. Luis Arraez is out there still on the open market, I believe. Is he somebody that would be affordable?
You know, it's such an interesting, you know, here's a guy that hits 300 all the time. I think he was under that last year, but he led the National League in hits. He had 181 hits, the most in the National League, but no OPS. So the fact that you're not a great defender, you really don't have a position other than first base. The square peg in the round hole, right? Mm-hmm. You're still a quality player, but most teams don't feel you fit in with what they want.
I think that is a good explanation. What else then would the Sox need? Because it sounds like a silly question, but Bruce, if you sign anybody else right now,
Scherzer,
what's the market for Scherzer? All right, I'll play along. And I went along with it earlier. You said Verlander and Scherzer's possibilities. What in the world would motivate them to want to come to Chicago to pitch for the White Sox?
They're old and they still want to pitch.
Wouldn't they go to a contender where they would have a chance to get to the playoffs?
I don't know if any contenders want that in the clubhouse.
Max Scherzer hooked on with the Blue Jays last year, and he was brought there basically to make that one start that he made in the postseason. He wanted they would get those guys for October. Not going to be an October on the South Side.
Is there anywhere in your thoughts that it would allow the fact that they could still be a five inning pitchers and they could add a lot of acumen to the clubhouse itself?
Oh, the acumen would be endless acumen when you talk about those two guys, but I just don't know what would motivate them to come here.
They're not getting other offers.
Might be it then. If you're the Sox, I feel like anybody coming to town, the next move that Chris Getz announces, if he is going to announce another move before spring training, would be a starting pitcher. You need a starting pitcher. I think you would be better off having a starting pitcher eat some innings, buy some time for your young prospects at AAA, maybe bring them up from Charlotte or wherever, Schultz, Hagen Smith, Tanner McDougal, whatever it is. Where's Drew Thorpe in all this in his recovery? All these kinds of questions. Jonathan Cannon gives you more time to develop. I think you need a veteran starter to do all the things I just described.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. Again, finding that right guy. You know, you mentioned last year and, you know, the way they went about it and, you know, the idea now that maybe a Scherzer or a Verlander would be the right guy to fill that role. But again, as much as the acumen and the past greatness might help, might they also be a distraction?
Could be, but what a nice distraction. I'm not sure what they would be distracting the Sox from. Oh, no.
Well,
this is so distracting.
The one thing that we started the show with, and it'll continue to be a theme this year, is that the White Sox had the fewest starting innings pitched in all of baseball.
That needs to change.
So that hurt that, but it also significantly impacted the Jonathan Leisure's having to be out there way too many times.
Yeah.
And taking a young arm who has a lot of potential, putting him in a situation of A, injury, B, not pitching up to the quality that he's capable of because he's out there too often.
Not that the Sox are set by any means, but I do think that this has been a productive offseason. I feel like their positional groupings are set in terms of numbers. I don't think they're going to add anybody to a crowded outfield with you have a couple guys out of options. Also, the infield, you want to give at bats to these young players to see exactly what you have. We haven't even mentioned Murakami. He's a guy that is going to be playing every day.
So the only thing that helps me being a veteran reporter is the idea and reminder that injuries will happen.
That's not the only thing, but that's
it's one
thing.
Of them.
That's a big thing.
It's one of them. And injuries are going to happen. And then how much depth do you really have, right? It's like the Cubs. Let's switch it over to the north side.
All right, let's go to the Cubs.
They have, as Hobie Milner said to us, the best defensive infield in baseball.
I think that's an argument.
They
a good
have
point.
Also
it's arguable, yes.
Two-thirds of the best outfield in baseball in gold gloves.
True.
And gold gloves in left and center.
Right field could be iffy.
Right.
A little sketchy.
But the idea is, do they have enough depth in the infield to cover up for, look, every position player other than Tucker played 145-plus innings, right? Games, right?
Games.
Right, 145-plus games. They have admitted, being counsel and Hoyer, that they're not going to be that lucky this year. You can't go into the season thinking that type of depth, they won't need that depth, right? So I think they need a second baseman shortstop type player to be added to their infield. Look, they're.
What are you going to do with Matt Shaw? You're already going to have enough difficulty finding at bats in games for him.
He's still in player development.
Well, that's disappointing.
That's who he is.
Well, then he should probably spend more time in Iowa.
Well, but they feel maybe that the player development can take place at the major league
level. If you're feeling like Matt Shaw's not ready to be the guy that you just described, you're back up at shortstop, you're back up at third, you're back up at second, you're back up in left and right field, that's his role. And if he's not ready for that role, then get a veteran and let him go to Iowa because he's got to be ready for that role. You're not messing around here. You're the Cubs, and you're chasing a World Series that is definitely a realistic possibility, or should be a realistic ambition for 2026. You don't have time to develop Matt Shaw. If Matt Shaw's not ready,
yeah,
see ya.
So their argument to you, and it's a great point that you bring up, because I don't disagree. But they will tell you, look what we did in the second year of PCA. Look what Bush did in his second year, right? Mm-hmm. Look at Daniel Palencia moving along. Player development means that you can keep them at the big league level and wait for them to get better. Shaw showed signs of being a better player in the second half, even though he slumped toward the end of the year. His power showed up in the second half after he was demoted to Iowa and then came back. He played quality, high quality defense at third base, right? So the guy is a ball player. They are counting on the fact that he's a ball player, played third base at a high level, even though he'd never played there before last year. So we are not going to be afraid to move him around the diamond.
Maybe, but here's the thing I look at with 2026. We applaud and appreciate Craig Counsell because of how patient of a man he is and a manager. And you do have some good examples you just cited about player development at the major league level, as you have PCA and other examples. I think 2026 has got a urgent tone attached to it. You went out and you spent $175 million on Alex Bregman. I don't think you're done adding to your starting rotation.
Right.
I'm not sure if every year you go into it wanting to weigh player development and winning equally, I don't think this is the year to do that. Because player development, to me, is a luxury. I'm not sure you can afford this year. Right now, you have to look at it, and I know we do this a lot anyway. You overreact to the outcome of every game or every series. But this is the year where you treat every game and every series with a little bit more urgency because of what you have done in the offseason to frame your expectations. And you have to be thinking.
In other words, you're telling me the Cubs are acting like a big market team.
Yes. Yes. And big market teams don't worry about player development at the major league level. Big market teams worry about winning 100 games.
Okay. It's a good argument. And I think philosophically, you're probably right. But again, player development has gotten the Cubs to where they're at right now, not just going out in the free agent market, using players they traded for, developed in their system, okay, even though they weren't necessarily young Cubs to begin with. They were developed in their system. Bush came already developed out of the Dodger system. So there's a lot of ways to get this done. In Shaw, again, another number one pick by the Cubs. Are you going to ignore that? Is there a prejudice by a front office because he's your number one?
Well, I think that he is a first-round draft pick that has already been treated like one, because I think his path has been a little accelerated, and we have seen that maybe before he was ready. So I think he's already received right. special treatment, if you will.
Right.
This is not the year to do that.
I will tell you that, you know, there's been murmurs about him and his political look at life and how that might impact his career. I don't think that has, in this case, I've never seen a player like this who is so committed to his baseball career. Now, you might say, well, he stepped away from the team for that one day for the funeral. Okay, that might be right. But as far as his work ethic, the way he's a teammate, the way he goes about his job, I wouldn't worry about any of
that. Well, I would say that, and I do wonder about his commitment in some ways. And I do think that's the elephant in the clubhouse, if you will, because you don't know how his teammates would respond.
Right. But I have the luxury of being there every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I watch the work ethic. I watch the compatibility with other teammates. This guy has it all going the right way.
Right. I think that they are in a position where they made a move. Now they don't have to count on him every day, which is probably better for him and also certainly better for the Cubs, because they have somebody who is a proven commodity at third base, and Matt Shaw will just have to find a role, whether it's utility in the infield or super utility in the outfield or a combination of both. All right, we got to take a break, Bruce. When we come back, I want to clear up something about Zach Gallen that probably applies to the pursuit of him from the Cubs and the White Sox standpoint. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Build something you can be proud of. There's something incredibly satisfying about learning something new and actually watching your progress build over time. That's what I love about Rosetta Stone. You don't have to dive in for hours. You start small, fit lessons into your day, and suddenly you're understanding more than you thought you would. Rosetta Stone has been the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years, and their immersive, intuitive method really stands out. There's no memorizing random vocabulary lists and no feeling lost. You learn naturally, starting with words, building to phrases, and then full sentences, without English translations. So it actually sticks. Plus, Rosetta Stone offers 25 languages, from Spanish and French to German and Japanese, all designed for long-term retention. Don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. Listeners of this podcast can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 to get started and claim your 50% off today. Go to rosettastone.com/rs10 and start learning today.
Why have we asked our contractor we found on Angie.com to be our kid's legal guardian? Because he took such good care when redoing our basement that we knew we could trust him to care for our kids, all 8 of them, should something happen to us.
Are you my dad now?
No, sorry, I do basements.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports and all things culture. From two U.S. Women's National Team World Cup champions and Olympians, follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com and always live on the free Odyssey app.
We've had a lot of fun this morning, and there's more fun on the way Monday. Do not miss this Monday morning. Our FM debut of 104.3 The Score. That's right. All score shows. Cubs, Bulls, all on FM. High fidelity all the time, including in downtown Chicago. So you're not driving around saying, oh, I can't hear them anymore. The Score will be heard still on 670 AM, but starting Monday at 8 o'clock during the Mullane Haw Show, we're having a party. We're going to celebrate. It is the debut of 104.3 on FM. Simulcast presented by the official sportsbook of The Score, Circus Sports. Sports betting the way it should be with no bet fees.
It's just going to be so great to hear it even in more clear tone all the time on FM. And, you know, of course, 670 is going to still be here, but this is going to be a real boost to the listener out there to be able to go to 104.3 and hear it in high fidelity.
It's going to be a thing. Looking forward to that Monday morning. You don't want to miss it. You don't want to miss the Mullane Haw Show. All right, Bruce, before we get out of here, want to clarify exactly what the Cubs and the Sox would be looking at giving up. It's a free agent, but giving up if they were to sign Zach Gallen, who remains a free agent, the right-hander from the Arizona Diamondbacks.
So you're going to have to give up a second-round pick if you're the Cubs, okay? Mm-hmm. That is a major consideration here on a player that we're assuming is going to get a 3-year deal and be able to walk after the first year. I think that's the biggest problem. We mentioned it in the beginning of our show, the idea that you're going to lose potentially 3 of your starting pitchers to free agency. So therefore, having some another veteran in there for at least 2 years in Gallen would be ideal. And you're going to be paying him in the $20-25 million area, okay? Mm-hmm. It's got to be that because he already turned down $22 million to go back to Arizona, right, for the qualifying offer. So you're losing a draft pick and you're getting this. What do you want to give up for Zach Gallen, who has certainly been an innings eater and a terrific pitcher, but didn't have the best year in the world last year?
I don't see the Sox doing that, and I would be a little surprised at this stage if the Cubs do. You brought up Verlander and Scherzer before in the last segment. You mentioned them in the context of the White Sox. What about the Cubs? Would they be interested at all, one, either? Because I do think they would bring what you could find a way to utilize, and that is that veteran moxie with postseason experience.
So in this case, I would probably say no, because they don't have the versatility to be bullpen guys. When you look at Ray and you look at Assad and you look at Brown, they have tremendous flexibility in being able to bring them up and back between starters mm-hmm. and bullpen guys. In the cases of these guys, it's like 4 and fly or 5 and fly. And now, if you're going to a 6-man rotation, which I think the Cubs might be doing
if they have,
this year,
if they find the right 6-man.
Right, right.
They're like the Bulls. They're looking for the right 6-man.
Right. So I don't think necessarily either one fits in okay. Very well. I think maybe more with the White Sox than the Cubs.
Do you expect a signing by the time spring training arrived for either team?
Not necessarily, no. I mean, look, go back to what Scherzer said, I think, last week, and that is, I'm looking to wait until spring training starts or after. And it, what happens then, David? What happens the second week of spring training that we hear
injuries?
About? Yeah.
A lot of injuries.
And it's all of a sudden these guys are, we don't want you. Oh, wait a minute. We need a veteran pitcher that's proved he can go out there and pitch five innings.
We'll end the show the way we started. Austin Hayes is a member of the Chicago White Sox, a veteran outfielder. 1 year, $6 million with incentives, likely to play left field, perhaps center field. He is good against left-handed pitchers. And we want to thank everyone for their role in putting the show together. Colson Montgomery, our guest, Hobie Milner, our Cubs left-hander, joined us as well. Adam Szczesny behind the glass, keeping us going. And also, Bruce, thank you for setting all of this up and your contributions
today. I will talk to you from sunny Arizona next week.
I am so jealous. For Bruce Levine, I'm David Haw. Thank you for listening to Inside the Clubhouse. Steve Rosenblum is next, right here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Follow and listen to Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.